My sermon is entitled Java and Judaism. And I figured, well, this is kosher because 2 years ago, someone wrote a book called Jews and Shoes. And last year, someone wrote a book called Jews and Booze. So I want to give a sermon on Jews and Java. Doesn't quite rhyme, but I want to start with three amazing stories about coffee and its role in Jewish life. One comes from a professor of modern Jewish history at Bar-Ilan University in Tel Aviv by the name of Eliot Horowitz. The second comes from a rabbi who has a most unusual kind of pulpit in the Bay Area, Northern California. The third story comes from Howard Schultz, who is the founder and CEO of Starbucks Coffee in Seattle. So the first lesson from Professor Eliot Horowitz, professor of modern Jewish history at Bar-Ilan. Dr. Horowitz wrote an essay a few years ago in which he proposed that there is a connection between coffee and customs like what we call the Tikkun Leil Shavuot. The Shavuot festival occurs in late spring or early summer. Shavuot, Christians call it Pentecost. Shavuot celebrates the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. And there is a custom of staying up all night on the eve of Shavuot to study Torah. Well, this custom was only made possible with the advent of coffee. Coffee made it possible to pull an all-nighter. And so Rabbi Isaac Luria and his Kabbalah followers in Safed in the Galilee instituted their programs of all-night study and prayer thanks to coffee. This is actually a true story. When I read about this, the first thought that occurred to me was, wait a minute, these are traditional Jews. These are Kabbalah devotees. And this latest development in secular culture is being used for spiritual purposes. They could have said, you know, this is something new, and therefore we're against it. They could have said, this is something non-Jews do, and so we forbid it. They could have said, this is something that might lead people to go to the coffee houses, and who knows what they'll be tempted to do there. Instead, they said, this is something that is secular, but we can use it for sacred purposes. And so they adopted it. What's the lesson here for us today? Well, we live in a fast-changing, high-tech world. We all know that. I just try to ask my daughters how to work my tablet. They told me to go get a lesson. Fast-changing, high-tech world, and we in our congregations need to respond to that challenge. Let me give you just one example of the kind of world we now live in. There was a study recently where elementary school children were asked, if you need some information, who do you go to? Can you guess what their answers were? 14% said that if they had a question, they would ask a teacher. 16% said if they had a question, they'd go to their parents. 70% said they would go to Rabbi Google. And, you know, rightly so. Rabbi Google knows more and can answer questions a lot faster than any teacher or parent that I know of. And so if this is true, then what should we be doing? We should be making sure we have a significant presence on the internet. Today, if a synagogue or a church does not have a website, it might as well not exist, because there's almost no way that the young people of today can find them. There was a time when if you were looking for a congregation, you went to the Yellow Pages. Now, the telephone book is becoming a relic. Children today don't know how to find anything that's not on the web. So the first lesson for us today has to do with the new technology of our time And I think of what Rabbi Isaac Luria and his Kabbalah followers did with the technology of their time. Learn it and use it for sacred purposes. Rabbi Luria is considered a mystic, but the story of how he used coffee to create the Eve of Shavuot all-night study session proves that he knew how to make use of the technology of his time for a sacred purpose. And we should do that as well. The second lesson I would have us learn comes from Northern California. If you know anything about that part of the country, it's not generally considered a great bastion of piety and religious faith. Probably the highest rates of unaffiliation in the country are in Northern California. Synagogues and churches are usually considered intimidating places. People feel if they walk into a congregation, they will not feel comfortable. If they walk into a synagogue, maybe they don't know Hebrew. Maybe they don't know when to stand or sit. Maybe they don't know on which side the prayer book opens. So they stay away. So how do we reach these people? One rabbi, a colleague of mine, her name is Ruth Adar, came up with an idea. If they won't come to the synagogue, then the synagogue should come to them. And so Rabbi Ruth Adar put an ad online and on Facebook, and by now I'm sure it's also on Twitter and whatever else they're called. And in this ad, she wrote the following. The coffee house rabbi will be at such and such a coffee house at such and such a time and date. If you have any questions you would like to ask me about Judaism, or if you would just like to schmooze with a rabbi, come join me. One person came because she had just found out that her grandmother was Jewish and she wanted to explore what that meant. Another person came because his mother used to say that she was 25% Jewish. And he wanted to know what that made him. Another was a secular Jew who was going to conduct a Passover Seder for the first time. And he was in panic. The word got around. And now Rabbi Adar has plenty of people who meet with her in coffee houses around the Bay Area. Some people have questions that are easy to answer. Some have questions about deeper spiritual matters. Some she directs to a synagogue that will fit their needs. When they ask her how much she charges, she tells them they can pay whatever they want to. Some just pay for her coffee. Others make larger contributions because they are grateful for what she has done for them by listening to their concerns. One person gave her a check in five figures. Little by little, the coffee house rabbi is becoming known all over the Bay Area, and people who would never set foot in a synagogue come to share a cup of coffee with Rabbi Ruth Adar. So what can we learn from the coffee house rabbi? I think we can learn how intimidating our synagogues are to strangers. We like to think they're friendly places, and for us, they are. If we come regularly, we soon develop a group of friends we feel close to. So we feel the synagogue is like our second home. But how does this place feel to strangers who walk in? Who makes sure they get a prayer book and a seat near someone who will show them the page? Who says hello to them and makes them feel at home? Who looks out for them afterwards in the social hour? So what we can learn from the coffee house rabbi is that there are plenty of people out there who are searching for something spiritual, probably a lot more than we realize, but we have to reach out and find them. These are two, perhaps relatively small suggestions that I've made so far. Now let me make a bigger one. This one comes from Howard Schultz, the founder and CEO of Starbucks. Howard Schultz happens to be a committed and enthusiastic Jew. But it's not for his Judaism that I want to talk about him this morning. Instead, I want to learn something from his business plan. When Starbucks started, people thought Howard Schultz was crazy. Who in their right mind would spend $5 or $6 for a cup of coffee? If you can buy a cup of coffee at McDonald's for a dollar, why would you spend $5 or $6 at Starbucks? All the experts thought he would fail. And yet today, Starbucks has more than 13,000 stores, not only in the United States, but in Europe, in Asia, in South America, in Africa. And when Howard Schultz was asked what the secret of Starbucks was, he gave a very simple answer. He said, all you have to do is make a coffee which tastes better than any other coffee on the market, and people will buy it, regardless of the price. Why do I quote that line? Because I fear that one of the great mistakes that we have made in the marketing, certainly of Judaism, and this may apply to other religions as well, is that we have watered it down in order to attract people. And that does not work. Judaism is a profound religion. It is a complex worldview. It is a system of ideas and ideals that has developed over thousands of years. And therefore, when we teach it, we should teach it seriously and substantively. We should teach it in all its depth. And if people do not understand it at first hearing, then let them concentrate and listen carefully until they comprehend it. So that's the lesson I would have us learn from Howard Schultz. Forgive the pun, but if he had watered down his product, he might have saved some money, but his coffee houses would have been a failure. And so it is with us. If we reduce our religion, our faith, our core system of values and beliefs, if we sell it cheap, if we have no standards, who will care and who will come? You know, God could have given us 5 commandments instead of 10. God could have convened a focus group to determine which of the 10 commandments people would like and which they would not. God could have offered the 10 suggestions for creative living. God could have offered the Torah on a 6-month trial period with an option to renew instead of an eternal covenant. But God did not do that. Instead, God set a standard, a goal that is almost impossible for us to reach. God told us, and this phrase appears throughout the Torah, to strive to become a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. The smart money would have told God to come up with a program that would be more acceptable, something like keep the Torah and you'll be popular. But God chose to offer us the best possible product and to tell us to always reach towards fulfilling it. That's what Howard Schultz did when he started Starbucks, and it worked pretty well for him. And that's what we ought to be doing in our congregations as well. For if we do, I believe it will work for us as it did for God. What if instead of thinking that we are consumers and the synagogue or the church is the product and it's our right to judge the product and shop around as much as we want, what if instead we thought of ourselves as partners in the task of a holy congregation? What if when someone joined our congregation, we not only required them to pay dues, but we also required them to commit themselves to sign up for at least 1 adult education class a year, a certain number of worship services a year, minimum, and a certain number of what we call mitzvah, social action deeds, every year? What would happen if we did these things? No one can say for sure, but judging by the success of Starbucks, it just might work. It's certainly worth a try. At least it would send out the message that this congregation is not just a social club, but it stands for something. And if it's what you believe a congregation should be all about, then this is the place for you. So then, my friends, these are three stories about coffee and Judaism. One teaches us to make use of our modern technology for the sake of Torah. Another teaches us to go wherever our people might be and do whatever we can to make Judaism accessible to those who do not know what it's all about. And the third story teaches us to set our standards high and to reach high in the teaching and in the study of the Torah. So what do you think of these three suggestions? If you'd like to talk with me about them and explore them further, please join me after services and let's talk about them over a cup of coffee, shall we? Which, by the way, I don't drink.